Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Here we go. We're going to talk about Lindsey Clancy again. I know, surprise, surprise. The prosecution rested in the Lindsey Clancy trial at Plymouth Superior Court after 14 days of testimony. More than 70 witnesses, both sides agree. And that's important to understand here, this case. It's not up for debate. Nobody is debating that she killed Cora Dawson and Callan. She's admitted it time and time again. You don't get that quite often in murder cases where the person on trial says, yeah, I did it. It was me right here. And then 80% of the audience goes, no, it wasn't. Nah, can't be. But that is somehow what's happening here. The fight is whether she was criminally responsible when she did it. That's what we're talking about. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. And we will get to the conspiracy bullshit too. Robin Dreek is with us. As always, a retired FBI special agent, chief of the counterintelligence behavioral analysis program. There's a lot to get into. Again, the prosecution's first witness. Let's just kind of do a little review here of how we got to where we're at now that the prosecution is wrapped up. Take a little look-see back on the case that they presented and how well they did or didn't. Patrick Clancy was the first witness we saw 14 days ago. He described Lindsey having one of her best days, hours before the killing. Snowman with the kids, photos that she texted him. Then he described months of intrusive thoughts, 13 medications, and a wife he called confusing to live with. Why put their most sympathetic witness first, I guess, is the question. Why did Patrick go on first, and what do you think it did for this case, other than cause a lot of conspiracy theories to begin? Yeah. But more so, what do you think it did for Lindsey Clancy, or not do for Lindsey Clancy, now that that first half of the trial is over?
So let's look at intent. That's what we do with every human being in any situation, is try to understand the intent of the person taking an action and see what their end state is that they're seeking and see what actions they took to support it, because that's exactly what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Because the prosecution is going to act in what they think is their best interest in order to get a conviction on Lindsey. And their claim was that she was not in a psychotic break, that this was premeditated, pre-thought out, planned out, because she wanted to get out of being a mom. She's overwhelmed with being a mom, and she wanted to kill her kids and fake her own death. That is, or fake her own S attempt. So by putting Patrick on first, I can assume, based on they think that's a good action, is that he will, because he had the closest proximity to her, he knew her best, and so he could more accurately claim than anyone else what her state of mind was for months, weeks, days, years, and a timeline of baselining her leading up to the death of her children, his children. And so by doing him first, putting him on first, it establishes that baseline of everything was fine until this. And so this is when she started breaking and cracking. And from the prosecution's narrative, it's going to be because she's overwhelmed with being a mother, not because of mental health or a psychotic break. It was all pre-planned. And then you get into the conspiracy theories. I won't even go there until you want to.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
that's what it is. It's about establishing that baseline for the jury of she was completely normal, acting normal. And if we want to later on get into comparison with Andrea Yates, which everyone's doing, it's fitting exactly the same anyway.
So I think it's important for people to remember there is the courtroom. There is the evidence that's being presented within that courtroom. That jury is told not to read social media, not yep. to be watching us, not to be watching TV about any not of the coverage of the case. So they, in theory, should not be absorbing the TikTok verse out there of this conspiracy theory of Patrick Clancy, because that's not part of either case, the prosecution or the defense. That's solely in the minds of TikTok users. Let me ask you this. Patrick, they saw him just as everyone else on the planet did. Do you think in any way, shape, or form, I'm not trying to go too far down the conspiracy mm-hmm. road here, but it's more so just recognizing that it exists. Do you think any of those 18 jurors walked away from Patrick Clancy's testimony in court and said, I think he did it? The 18 jurors, did any of those walk away with that theory that is running so rampantly on the internet right now?
No, there's no way. Yeah. And so his demeanor, as we've said before, I've said, as presented before the jury, was kind of a flat effect mm-hmm. Or affect. And from processing all that he processed and when describing everything that went on, he had elements of control and trying to compartmentalize from the pain he went through. And mm-hmm. I think that was evident. I think the main thing that was very telling that it's not him to the jury is a 911 call. Yeah. His reaction during a 911 call, which we didn't hear it.
No.
The jury heard it, but we saw the result of it, and we heard some elements of what happened and the things that he said during it was completely congruent with exactly as it was described by everyone. And then everything gets supported also by the first responders as well. So, but there's no way in living hell, in my estimation, from being in that courtroom, living sequestered basically from the world of information, would I come to a conclusion that it was him. It would start, to me, it was a good way to pragmatically and objectively, with someone close to Lindsay, start the case, because it was non-sensational. He wasn't overly emotional. It really, I thought, set the groundwork for what the prosecution was attempting to do to establish a baseline that nothing was abnormal in her life.
And I want to get into the 911 call a little bit more when we talk about Patrick, because, I mean, as soon as you have a piece of evidence in this case that seems to really just be non-contestable, it's like, here's what it is. Mm-hmm. And granted, we didn't get to hear it, and I think that's a flaw on the part of the system. We've heard so many 911 calls in horrendous cases. Why we didn't get to hear this one, I don't know. I think it's stupid.
This one statement, I think, helps.
Well, I think if we've been able to hear it, it would help with the conspiracy theories. Maybe that's my opinion, my guess. Not help them along, but more like quash them down, because right now what you have with the conspiracy theories on Patrick and that 911 call, people keep going back to, he said the effing kids.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
That somehow that is a statement of his hatred towards his children. And then that is somehow indicative of him being behind all of it, because he said she killed the effing kids. I would probably say the same thing, quite honestly, because that's how I talk. And just for a moment, I don't mean to go too far down the Patrick route here, but I'm going to on this one, since we're already on this angle of conversation. I have been in a life situation where I was with my partner who had postpartum. It's hellish. It was probably some of the worst times of my life, and I'm not the one who had it. I have so much empathy. I can't imagine being the person that's going through it, because your brain's not working. It's functioning in horrible ways, and it's totally fucking with you. And you're believing some of the ways that your mind is fucking with you. Again, it's horrific, and it can totally screw with you. It wasn't psychosis, but it was not good. It was a rough time there. And I never had a partner that threatened the children or anything. But believe me, as the partner, seeing some of the weird things, if you will, or cognitive distortions that person was coming up with because of what was going on in their brain, it didn't feel all that remotely far off that we could get there, just by ways of talking. So, you know, did those sort of things run through my mind of like, oh my God, what if that were to happen? Yeah, I mean, it scared the shit out of me. It never did happen. But I can tell you, if I'm looking at it through Patrick's shoes and trying to understand where he was at, if I had come home and saw that, if that had happened in my world, I probably would have said the same fucking thing. I would have been like, yeah, she killed the effing kids. Why be? Not because you hate your kids, but because, you know, there's been a buildup to this for the last however many years in Patrick's case with the postpartum that he had been the partner of the person for years and knows how scary it could get and how dark it could get. And it's not that crazy of a thing to step back and be angry and be, oh my God, she effing did it. How that it leads and leans into conspiracy of he had something to do with it, I think totally misses the point and misses any sort of understanding or empathy that one may have for what Patrick was going through in that moment in time.
So here's what you do in every situation. We were talking about this before we started, Tony. So as a behavior guy, or actually any investigator, and our audience, you know, as critical thinkers, here's what we do. The first thing you do when you're presented information or you have a theory, let's start with, I have a theory. The first thing the scientific method and critical thinking does, and the way you should be thinking is, it's now time for me to disprove my theory. Let's see if I can disprove my theory. And then if someone else has another competing theory slash conspiracy theory, I will do an attempt to prove their conspiracy theory. Because that's how we maintain intellectual honesty. And so let's do it with the 911 call. My first impression was not, oh my God, he said they're fucking kids, so he must have done it. Because when you do that, what you're doing is you're cherry picking a word, giving yourself the confirmation bias that you're looking for to support your conclusion you have. You're not trying to disprove your theory. You're trying to cherry pick what you want to prove your theory because you don't like him because you don't want to place it on Lindsay. You think the healthcare system's fine, so you're going to place it on Patrick. So now I have a theory. I'm going to keep picking, cherry picking thing to prove the theory. So now here's how you reverse it. And so here's my theory. Let's see what I can do to disprove it. Here's a simple thing you do. Listen to other 911 calls. Boom. What every other 911 call that is made by someone, look, go through our past cases that we've had on this show. I challenge you to do it. Every single one where we've had a 911 call where the person that called in a 911 call either became the suspect, was a suspect, convicted of or whatnot, what's the first thing we hear? Them describing their actions when they arrived on scene. In other words, let's do a thought experiment. If he had been indeed the person had done this, what typically would I expect to hear if he had actually done this and tried to act it and try to stage it? He would call 911 and say, hey, I'm Patrick and I just got back from running an errand and picking up dinner for my family. I walked in the front door. Actually, first I saw Lindsay, my wife, on the front yard. I don't know whether she's alive or not. I then decided to walk in. And so he would give a timeline of what he did, his actions for cover. Every single case we've ever covered was exactly that. What was his first reaction? Holy fuck. Mm-hmm. And that was the reaction to what he saw. And I guarantee you, here's what's also coming out. And I think his F-bomb he dropped was more about him missing it. That was a guilt coming out that it's his. Yeah. So he's not just angry and upset, shocked, traumatized, but also you're hearing his guilt that he went out and said, oh, F-bomb, I should not have done that. So you're hearing all the emotions coming out at once of the action he's observing, not his participation in it. So that is a huge difference. So disproved right there.
Now, I agree. what people can wrap their minds around and conjecture and go, that's fact. It's really kind of baffling in this case.
Context. When you operate cherry picking a word without context or without analysis and easiest thing in the world, just compare and contrast. That's it. There's so much data on all these things. I have pages and pages, my own experience of 22 years in the FBI of behavioral analysis, as well as a treasure trove of data that's out there for you to research on your own. Don't listen to TikTok, who's going for the 5-second clickbait highlight reel that's going to get them the algorithm to get more clicks. Go do your own research with an open mind, with the intent to disprove your own theory and try to prove the conspiracy theory. Take an honest shot at it without the confirmation bias. Don't cherry pick what you're looking for. Go for the opposite opinion. Every time I do research, I'm saying, what are other experts saying? What's the DSM saying? What's the research say? Deep analysis. These are the things I'm doing so I can get a bigger picture of all these things. That's why I did the deep dive on Andrea Yates today. Oh, my God. All these people on that. Do some research. You're not even close.
The prosecution, since we're talking about the prosecution's case, it's now rested. One of the biggest witnesses that they called, Dr. Jennifer Tufts. She prescribed 12 of the 30 medications Lindsay received in 4 months. Throw that sentence out there, and I'm just amazed that people are going to try and argue it of like, well, that's not anything to do with this. On cross, Reddington got her to admit she'd never met Lindsay in person, never accessed records from other providers, and didn't know Lindsay had called the S hotline twice. This is a prosecution witness that came up and said all that. I mean, if we're talking the legal end of things, this seems to be a witness that you kind of got to bring up in a certain way, in a certain place. But I just feel like, I don't know, they didn't, if I'm on the side of the prosecution, which I'm not, but if I were to put myself in their shoes, I don't think the line of questioning and the things I was able to get to be revealed out of that witness would have necessarily helped my case. I guess I'm wondering, do you think the prosecution here, the prosecutor here, the big boat lady, is fully invested in this case as a prosecutor? We've talked about that with Eric a little bit, because sometimes that happens. Right. Or is this just as confusing and monotonous and difficult to prosecute, as a prosecutor? As it looks, and you're really kind of being asked to take on a Herculean task of trying to prove that something is not what it is, even though the medical facts are pointing towards it, and even medicine and science are working against you. The only thing working for the prosecution is conspiracy. They're in terms of facts and science, it's all leaning in Lindsay's corner. How do you think the prosecutor has weighed that? Do you think that they take any of that into account, or she's taking any of that account in this case?
I think, to your first point, I totally think both of them are completely 100% emotionally vested in her being guilty. Mm-hmm. And here's how you know. When you see Lindsay falling apart, completely collapse in herself. You see the testimony from the people. You see absolutely everything. You see all the emotion in that courtroom coming from everyone but the two prosecutors. And so ask yourself, I made that comment on X the other day about, I'd love to see their psychopathy level scale for those two.
Yeah. But,
so let's put my little jest aside there. What makes someone not have an emotional response to something like that? If they think it's an act. And so I believe they're both completely on board because they think she staged her S attempt, and they think Lindsay staged her S attempt and that it was a flubbed S attempt. So if you think that someone is acting, then you're not affected by their performance in the courtroom. You're not affected by anything because you just have this abhorrent distaste and negative, huge negative emotions towards that person. So anything revolving around them, you can completely block out. It doesn't bother them whatsoever. And so I think that's the first baseline on that. And I think what they're doing, they're working with what they got. And what they have is shit. The people involved in trying to prove their theory, in other words, they didn't argue, they're not arguing against their theory. They're not trying to disprove their theory first. They came up with their hypothesis and theory that she's a mother that wanted to get rid of her kids because she's overwhelmed and she wanted to quit. And so they're going to work with what they got. And the first person after Patrick who is what they got Jennifer Tufts. I'm sorry, is that her first name? But it's Tufts. Dr. Tufts. And who do you have to work with on this one? You have someone that was licensed for 1 month that had like all the things you pointed out and the things that Kevin Reddington so majestically, hammered her on was the fact that she was ill suited to do the job she was doing. But what the prosecution is trying to show, their intent was to say that Lindsay had no problem. She's not reporting anything. It's all on her. There's no issue here. Because look, the psychiatrist says there's no issue. Lindsay's trying to shop for drugs because she's trying to do drugs. I mean, their attempts to try to prove their emotional reaction to things, that she's guilty. So I think and feel she's guilty. I'm going to use what I have. That's why it's landing more on the defense side, because what she has to work with proves the point that this was a shit show leading up to what happened.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I very much fail to see how anyone is getting from or getting even to. She hated her kids and hated her life and wanted to start out fresh. And this was the method and the lever to get there. Where's the evidence of that at all? Like, there's nothing, not in her journals, not in her writings, not in anything she said to anyone. The only evidence that exists in Lindsay Clancy's history has been, I want to feel better. I want to be a mom again. I want to feel something for my children and my family and myself. She was feeling utter numbness, which is scary. And people fall into that. And bless your heart if you've never been there and you're judging other people who have.
And Tony, I want to add one thing on this that shows this parallel that people are ignoring, because I think it's a good time to insert it. And I apologize if it's not. So the whole diagnosis thing that the prosecution's trying to put its hat on, that she didn't suffer a psychotic break, she never sought help, that she wanted to get out of this. So let's compare that. Everyone's saying, well, Andrea Yates was a clear example of it.
Yeah.
Andrea Yates was not diagnosed with a psychosis until the birth of her third child.
Huh.
15 months prior to her actually killing her four children, because then after she was actually diagnosed, it took her three children to be diagnosed. She had postpartum depression, and then after the third, and after her S attempt as well, on the second, are we seeing parallels here that someone says, oh, Andrea Yates is so much different. She was clinically presenting and Lindsay wasn't. No, same exact time period after the same number of children, basically doing the exact same thing. So it took the medical professionals, even back then, to come up with the same conclusion, took them the same amount of time, and almost exactly. And the same people were standing by her that are standing by Lindsay. And even after that case, they said a lot of work has been done to understand women's health and postpartum psychosis. Really? Then how come we're exactly, for those people who say it's different, how come we're exactly matching it again today?
Oh, a lot of work has been done. It's just not a lot of people have accepted it, I think, is the answer to that question. We haven't advanced all that much from witch trial days at the end of the day. As human beings, as visceral human beings, our gut reaction is still burn the witch. It's not ask questions and figure out what actually is happening here. And this is a prime example of it. And it makes you go, 1693 wasn't all that long ago. The prosecution, let's go to our another place in this and give us your thoughts in the comments section about how the prosecution has done so far. Substack, YouTube, drop your thoughts right there. The prosecution has rested now in the Lindsay Clancy case. The judge denied a defense motion for a required finding of not guilty. That happens in every case. And Kevin Reddington started calling witnesses the same afternoon. Lindsay Clancy's mother and sister took the stand within hours of the prosecution's closing. The trial has certainly shifted now. Lindsay's mother, Paula Musgrove, testified that Lindsay texted her in October of 2022, not saying, I hate my husband. I really want to get a new boyfriend. I don't like my kids. I want to just go live a life free of them and be able to go to the TJ Maxx whenever I feel like it. No, she said, I'm really sick. Something is wrong. Musgrove drove from Connecticut then to Duxbury that day. She told the jury, Lindsay said the medications were destroying her mind. The mother going to the stand saying, I was there for this woman that was basically deteriorating and falling apart. The world somehow seeing a cash-hungry grandmother that's trying to make money off of GoFundMe. That's the weird parallel to all this. And by the way, I dived into all that too last night. So let's make a quick dispelling of all of that. They're trying to profit off of this. People are conflating two different GoFundMes. One was actually set up by a friend of Patrick. Equated to a couple $100,000. It helped with the burial costs and such. The other one was set up by friends of the parents, and that was to help with them moving their lives for several years. They're retired and moved in with her and took care of her, and then trying to cover those costs because they're not working anymore. And moving across the country and to different areas, and there are costs involved with those sort of things, and the therapy and the shit and everything that goes with it. It wasn't exactly a money-making venture. The family wasn't there going, oh, it's payday time. Lindsay's crazy. Let's cash in. But in the parallel universe that some seem to live in, you know, they were, you know, big pimping, spending G's.
Well, let's look at, again, let's look at past cases. When people are trying to make money off of death, what are they doing? Every single case we do, Tony, what's the first thing I do? Is there an insurance policy?
No.
Was there an insurance policy on the three kids? That's the first thing you ask. Because if someone's trying to profit off the death of someone, it's the first thing they do. You know, every single case. No one, especially when you look at the whole, the relationships that are forged in this family are so, they're a model for what people should strive to achieve in their families. And I'm not saying, you know, with obviously the tragic ending with Lindsay and what she did to her children. I'm saying every other aspect. The parents' involvement, the caring of everyone. I watched this morning, again, as of the recording, I'm watching not just, I watched Linda, you know, Lindsay's mom's testimony, but this morning, Lindsay's mother-in-law was on there. Lindsay reached out not just to her own mother, but to her mother-in-law, who's also a labor and delivery nurse for 38 years. She's the one that introduced her to the clinic that we said could have actually saved Lindsay's life if that one first nurse practitioner hadn't been able to move on. That was Lindsay's mother-in-law.
Yeah.
So think about this in your own lives and people you know. Are you that close to your in-laws that you are, that they're all in with you too? If there was any leakage anywhere where there's an unhealthy relationship, whether it's between Patrick, Lindsay, in-laws, kids, profit versus anything else in life, do you really think that a guy like Kevin Reddington and everyone else in their circle, her friends, her family, everyone, there wouldn't be leakage somewhere? This is the most airtight, non-dysfunctional leakage I've ever seen in any case. And when you have something that tight with healthy, with the exception of the tragic, horrendous things that happened to Lindsay, it just doesn't work. So when you have such healthy relationships, that's the first thing you do in every investigation. It's the first thing I do in everything in life is I look for who's in my life, what relationships, communication is what tells those things. And what are they showing? All the text messages. We're binders full of text messages, checking in multiple times a day, 2, 3, 4 times a day. And what do I do with my kids every day? Same thing. My 26-year-old Marine that's about to be deployed overseas. We text all day long. Why? Healthy, strong relationships. I'm looking for leakage from that norm. There's no leakage. And so therein lies the relationship there. I thought it was strong.
How do you wrap? I mean, I don't know. You've been struggling to wrap your mind around this, as have I. I've been texting back and forth since this has been going on. I'm like, what the hell? But I mean, how do you wrap your mind around this? I mean, you have literally the entire ecosystem of Lindsay Clancy, the ex-in-laws, her parents, her own ex-husband, everybody that's close and knows this woman has rallied around her after she killed her three kids.
Yeah.
And they're all saying, this is not her. This was the psychosis. This is absolutely horrific. We know her well than a stranger in Paducah, Kentucky, that's watching a 45-second TikTok and has a gut feeling. They're all saying, we know this woman. We've known this woman her entire existence, and this is not what she is. Everybody is on her side in this that is close to her. Why is it that Steve in Paducah, or Jill in Kalamazoo, who watched a 45-second TikTok, feels the authority and has the I guess the audacity to go online and so blatantly throw something out there of saying, I think the husband did it. I think she's faking it. I think all her outbursts in court, her crying, her uncontrollable sorrow of being put in front of these horrific images and having to face what she did, which she's not like she's not saying she's facing. She knows she did it. She said she did it. But oh, she's having a reaction to it. It's fake. What gives a stranger that authority, and what are they getting out of that, of standing over someone who is suffering, standing over the husband who is suffering, and saying, I don't believe anything you're saying. I don't believe anybody in your circle. I think you're all lying. Everybody who knew her, everybody who is her, anybody who's close, you're all full of shit, and I know better because I saw a TikTok. What the hell is that?
So I'll do my armchair psychology. I think because we're seeing, I mean, there's so many different conspiracy theories.
There's a lot in this.
I've never seen so many. So what my mind goes to when I see so many different conspiracy theories is that there's a lot of projection going on. I think people are projecting a lot of their own insecurities, a lot of their own trauma, a lot of their own inner fears, especially because, and again, doing the deep dive empathy on my side, I have two beautiful children that grew into amazing adults. As everyone knows, my labor and delivery nurse, my fighter jet son. Yeah. But I can tell you, when they were screaming from colic at like under a year old, I can tell you, I wanted to rip my eyeballs out.
Sure.
I think because a lot of us had those moments as parents, again, a small part of it, that were excruciating. I mean, being a parent of young kids is a very traumatizing event because there's no rule book. And so I think because we've all, I have not met a parent that didn't have a moment when they just wanted to end it all because it sucks so bad. You know, we've had those moments, you know, in a fleeting thing, in a half joking thing, but at the same time though, it was there. And I think so part of it is us projecting, well, I overcame it, so can you, or maybe I didn't, or I had thoughts that I'm ashamed of. And so because I'm ashamed of it, you did it, so I'm better than you. So I got to project that out. So we project out all these myriad of our own insecurities, our own trauma responses, all these things out to the rest of the world. And what gives you the authority? That's a great question. What gives us authority? Friggin' social media gave them the authority. And so there's no repercussions. And they'll ignore the people that are haters. But what are they also seeking? Now we get to self-radicalize because now I'll find other people that have the same insecurities, say trauma responses. And so it's clustering. Mm-hmm. All these people are clustering around group mindset. And so now you got a cluster of people that are going to hand and cherry pick all the data points that are going to support their own insecurities that they're projecting out on this case. I mean, I said before we started, this case has not only highlighted the incredible ineptitude of the mental health system for women, especially with postpartum. I think it's really highlighted the mental health of our entire country and world
as a whole.
Yeah,
how we're able to take this information in and process it, and this is what comes out the other side.
It's given me great pause with a lot of people of like, I got to really assess, am I talking, and I still talk to absolutely everyone, love engaging, but am I talking to a critical thinker or am I talking to someone that's going to be dealing with me with their own insecurities and trauma responses, which generally we all do, but it's highlighting how far our path of discovery and self-awareness people are on as well, because... and even the conspiracy theories of her faking it, I said it before too, if she's faking this, she should get every single Oscar that's ever been awarded in Hollywood, because you can't fake years and years and years of relationships. How do you fake the years prior to this break? How do you fake all these things? How do you fake post? These emotions I've seen fake 22 years watching people perform. Just again, do your own research. Don't listen to Robin. Do your own research. Look at everything we've covered on this channel. There's Tony's, our channel's, and it's not a pump for the channel, but it's an easy place to find it. All these different cases. Pick your poison. There's so many different cases are categorized on YouTube. Just watch, just listen, just see the comparisons. Pick your own or do your own. I mean, just go down the Andrew Yates one that everyone's comparing it to. Yeah. Good. Do your own research. You'll come to your own conclusion.
a lot of people, you know, are including, I'm going to address a question here about Coffin Daffer too. You know, she was saying yesterday she doesn't buy it. I'm not trying to put words. I'm just trying to reiterate what she said the other day about, you know, she didn't buy the, you know, her performance, as she called it, basically in court, her reacting to those shots. Coffin Daffer had the exact opposite reaction you and I did to Lindsey Clancy. Exactly. And a lot of people do. So as the question there is, can I politely ask you why we continue to give Coffin Daffer airtime? Because it's important to be able to engage with people who disagree with
you.
And if you don't do that, if you say, screw that, you have a different opinion, I don't want to hear from you, we never get anywhere. Nobody gets anywhere. So while one side may dig in, and I've dug into plenty of things too, where I'd love to not dig into it further because it frustrates the living shit out of me. Trust me, actually prepping for having the conversation with Jen yesterday, I was like, oh, do I even want to talk about this with her because it makes me so angry because we disagree so much on it. But you know, that's how we learn from each other. That's how we can understand other people's sides and learn how someone got there. Sometimes people take a listen and go, oh, I didn't think of it that way. Okay. And that's how we have a dialogue and how we can go back and forth. The worst thing we can do on anything, whether it be this case or just life in general, is for us to all shut up and go to our tribes and not interact, which is basically where we're at in our country and why we're here right now. But that's why you have to engage with people who have differing opinions. That's how you grow. That's how you learn. That's how you understand things. And it stops us from being so damn tribal and shut off to everybody. We can disagree and still be friends. It's okay.
And perfectly well said, Tony, and thanks. And so for everyone watching today, and it's a great question. Everything you see me covering today and all the inserts I've had on this is exactly what Jen brought up during our show. Yeah. And so what did I do afterwards? I did a deep dive trying to prove what she had said about her performance, trying to prove what she said about Andrew Yates. And then also she had cited that she had that psychiatrists don't agree with the psychotic break. So I actually listed out, I can list.
She was wrong on so many things she said.
I researched that as well because, you know, I always say you might be right. Let's explore it. And so and that's what we do on our show. We explore every angle because, you know what? Everyone's going to have a good day and some people are going to have an off day and some people are going to be right on. I've been wrong on cases. And I'm going to be right on cases. And so this was a moment I personally think she's off. But that's okay. We research it. We all have a moment.
Yeah. And as somebody said, you know, she has no understanding of mental health. You know, I don't think she has no understanding. But she has her own understanding of it. We all come to it from different places and different places of understanding. And it's based on who we are, what our experiences have been, and it's different. But again, that's okay. We're all coming from different places, and we all have different understandings of it, some deeper than others, some far more personal than others as well, which is why everybody, I think this case comes to so many people in so many different ways because there's little avenues, there's little tendrils of this that speak to a lot of people in a lot of very different personal and dark corners of their life that they don't like to revisit. You know, you talk about a lot about everybody's kind of got their secret spots, their kind of places of shame or whatnot. I think this case touches a lot of those places and places that we don't want to revisit, whether because it's something we've done ourselves or some just a dark place, a dark time where things weren't going well with either someone we were with or ourselves. There's self-reflection involved in this case for everyone. And it hits a dark spot that I think a lot of people don't want to go to. And I think that's what part of it is.
And also on Jen, I'll categorize Jen with a lot of law enforcement, because I actually said this, I cited it yesterday during a conversation with her. When you do the research on where people in different demographics and social backgrounds fall, like employment is what I meant, on this case, typically law enforcement, like Jen, falls on the camp that Lindsey's guilty. Because when you have a lifetime and a career of reps of just a facts man, boom, 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 you're looking at facts, data, and details, and the emotion doesn't come into it, you know, because it's not what they do day in and day out. So it's easy to see the context in which she comes to her conclusion, because that's how she typically approaches every case. And And you can see my time in the Bureau is very different. The cases I worked and the human behavior element, I worked 100% of my time of recruiting competent human sources, intelligence operatives, spies, and espionage cases, which required a different skill set for 22 years than Jen's skill set. So it's a different optic and context in which I do my analysis on, because I'm always figuring out what makes people do what they do. That's a different mindset if you're hired to do an investigation. That's a completely different mindset. But I'm always trying to understand a deeper reason behind the motives and the intent for people to do what they do. Yeah. And so it's a different optic of engagement.
Yeah. And it's good to have people with different strengths and different areas for different cases, because sometimes you need more of this and less of that, or more of that over there. And it is what it is. But that's why. That's why it's good to have varying opinions.
Yes.
On a program. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in and give them to us. Links are in the description. One more segment on this today. Patrick Clancy conspiracy theories were loud before the trial started. 14 days of live stream testimony later, they've gotten louder, not quieter. TikTok creators are scrutinizing surveillance footage, comparing photos of Patrick's new wife to Lindsay. That's one of my favorites that people are doing. I feel horrible for this family. Oh, and building theories out of forensic testimony that no investigator has ever endorsed or has ever even happened. Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, with us. As we continue to discuss, and your thoughts in the comments section, people are putting photos of Patrick's new wife. I'm not even going to say her name because I don't want to open up an opportunity for someone to Google her. Showing photos of hers next to Lindsay. They're saying, see, same hair, same build. It's a replacement. And they're treating it as evidence that he planned the whole thing to trade one woman for another. Yeah. What does that actually tell you about someone who is looking at that and going, ha, hole in one. That's what's happening here, despite there being no evidence to any of that.
I think you need to turn off the TV.
Go touch some grass.
Yeah, go touch some grass.
Or smoke some grass. It might help you too.
It might, anything. It's data picking. I mean, that's all people are doing right now. They're data picking. They're data picking the things that they will then morph into the support. I mean, how many times have we said on a show, and for anyone that is thinking these things, I mean, our audience is such a great critical thinking audience. And if you see yourself on the opposite end of that, on this one, I'm not saying you're not critical thinking, because in your own mind we are, but ask yourself, if you're off of what we're saying and the way we're thinking about this, ask yourself, what is it that makes me feel that way? You know, do a deeper dive on that and ask yourself, am I just seeing things I want to see and I'm picking this to support? Because one thing we keep saying on the show is that as a species, we're great at creating patterns and seeing patterns as a species that aren't there. You know, and so we create patterns. So in other words, if you think Patrick is guilty, the pattern you're going to create are, you're going to see this, I'm going to see this, I'm going to see this, I'm going to say that, oh, look, she looks just like Lindsay. He must be guilty. What? It's so far askew I can't even come up with words for it. It's just so far askew of any sort of supportive analysis of the conclusion that you've come up with that you're trying to prove. I mean, just so, like I think you said, if you have a type, you have a type. I mean, or it's not, and to me, I doubt, because again, you look at her background, she's a medical doctor. What was Lindsay? She's a medical professional. She's a labor and delivery nurse. Perhaps he's into people that are service-oriented and caring individuals for others. Perhaps.
Whoa, killer.
Because you know what? Interesting enough, Patrick's mother was also a labor and delivery nurse. Huh.
Killer.
38 years.
He's a killer.
Huh.
Killer.
You know, and here's an interesting analogy. My son-in-law's mother also is labor and delivery nurse. My daughter, labor and delivery nurse. Isn't that kind of interesting? They all must be guilty.
Oh my God. So. Oh my God. Oh my. Yeah. I want to wrestle through some of these things. Lindsay told Patrick after the killings that she heard a man's voice telling her if she didn't act, she would lose her chance. She's testified, or she's told her doctors this. This is coming out in court. This isn't like some sort of conspiracy. She heard a voice. This is the cognitive things that were going on in her brain. Basically, these manifestations. And the conspiracy crowd hasn't said, they're not going down the road of, no, you didn't hear those things. You're just making that up. There are some people who are doing that. They're going down the road of, Patrick was the voice. Patrick was somehow sneakily making her think she was hearing a voice. I don't know quite how you do that. Do you do that like through your devices in your home and like drop in on people like you can do with Alexa? Or how? It's like, wow, this is creative. I haven't heard this one before of someone faking voices in someone's head. I don't know how you do that, but there's a lot of people believing Patrick was like whispering in her ear and making her believe that there was a voice in her head. There's no evidence that supports that claim whatsoever. But how do you fight? How do you argue with someone on that? Because there is no evidence to support it. And there's also no evidence against it because it's not real.
The first word you says, how do you fight it? You don't fight it. You just let it spin around in circles. And you ask a simple question. Show me. That's all. Just show me. Just show me. And until you can show me, great. In other words, show me how you can give it to me so I can prove it. Show me how I can prove it. That's all I ask people. It's like, all right, you have a theory. Show me how I can prove it. I tried and I can't. Show me how you can prove that.
But here's how people prove things now. Maybe this is why this works so well. People don't have to go back to evidence to prove anything. They just have to go to a TikTok, from Jill in Akron. And Jill in Akron was talking about it. And Jill in Akron heard this, and Jill in Akron's going to rattle off 40 different unproven facts in the same TikTok video. And that happens to be one of them. So that's how they prove it. That's how they get that false equivalency of proof in their mind that they then run with because somebody else is already talking about it rather than the actual facts. So I don't know what that's called. I'm sure there's a smart word for it, but that's maybe Robin knows it.
No, just nutters. Nutters being nutters.
Confirmation bias of some sort that's being based on unsubstantiated information or just flat out lies. Prosecution spent 14 days arguing that Lindsay sent Patrick to the store as part of her plan to get him out of the house. Yep. The conspiracy crowd says Patrick engineered the errand and it is his alibi. Same 25 minutes, totally opposite views. Oh, and by the way, the whole time during that conspiracy, she's calling him, she's calling the store, she's doing all these things, I guess, to play out part of Patrick's conspiracy. Again, just none of it makes sense. I get conspiracy theories that have pieces to them that lend into it going, oh, ooh, that's kind of weird. This doesn't have any of it. None of it lends itself to the conspiracy theory. It's really a lot of forcing this round peg in this triangular hole.
So, I'm sorry, I'm doing my little snicker shuffle right now because typically I'm not paintbrushing because if you're one of these people that think this, I don't want to be insulting if you're a good, healthy human being and you have great relationships in your life, but in general, for people that come up with some wild stuff like that, it's simply because you've done it yourself where you tried to get one over on your spouse and it didn't friggin' work. And so this is why you recognize it, is that because you tried it and it didn't work. I mean, so much of these things are projections. Just like COVID really, I thought was an interesting, so many horrendous things happened during COVID, but COVID really highlighted how much secret relationships are going on because all of a sudden you couldn't see your secret relationship. Everyone's in lockdown. So that all those things got highlighted. And so all the behaviors that went behind hiding things became highlighted.
Is that ultimately what's at the core of all of this case so much?
Some of it.
Is that there's a lot of people who've had very, and I don't know, I'm just throwing it out there. A lot of people who've had very unhealthy thoughts about A, their children at some point in life, mm-hmm. Or B, their spouse. And the idea of that being exposed, not even directly, but indirectly, that a human being who has children or a spouse or both could be capable of those emotions and feelings. And somebody seeing this being played out in a courtroom in its extreme, when it goes to the absolute worst that it could go to. Are people seeing this and going, well, I felt that way one day, you know, or just, you know, never in a state of psychosis, but just sheer emotion, just being a human being, what we are, ups and our downs. And sometimes we feel things that are not healthy and not good, but we can recognize it and go, that's not good. I got to back away from that. Is it flying too close to the sun? And it's part of the mask that we put up and pretend, I would never do that. I could never do that. I'm incapable of doing that. But in reality, we're all somewhat capable of doing that. And it's one of those capabilities that nobody wants to admit they have.
You know, I know I've used this comparison numerous times for different cases and different aspects, and that's alcohol use disorder. And here's how I'm going to liken it to this one. People who suffer alcohol use disorder, which I used to call alcoholism, still do in some points, one of the first signs that you might have alcohol use disorder or be an alcoholic is when you start comparing and contrasting everyone else's alcohol use.
Yeah.
And you're saying, well, I'm not that bad. So sure. you're constantly seeking these comparisons to say, well, I had those feelings too, but I didn't kill my kids. And so I think a lot of this is the rationalization that I'm okay. I have doubts about myself, but I must be okay because I'm not that bad. And so they're using this case to project all these different aspects of what they think they would have done or they could have done if they were as bad as that. But I'm not as bad as that, so I must be okay. I must not need mental health help. I must not need counseling because I didn't go that bad. Again, is it everyone? No, but I think there's definitely elements of it because you see, never is one case or one situation a blanket, like it's just this or just this. No, there's lots of elements of all these things because human beings are vastly complex. All of us are different, you know, just like there's never two snowflakes alike. There's never two human beings alike. And so all the little things that make up the soup of who we are, our genetic goo, is all very different. But I think these are definitely some prevalent things that are coming out that are a lot of these different projections of our own insecurities, of our own comparison contrast to say, well, at least I'm not this bad. I mean, I did it myself. So one thing that people do that are moving through and arrive in a healthy place, that's why I encourage everyone to go back and listen to last Wednesday's episode with Siobhan Scott, our amazing psychotherapist, because here's Siobhan, her great book, Nightbird, and her other book, talk about she is someone that was unhealthy through life circumstances and context, became self-aware, moved through it, owned the behaviors, not ashamed of it, and became this amazing psychotherapist for others. And so someone who's a healthy place in life has open, honest communication, transparency, and vulnerability. And so those are the type of people that can actually take these things in. They see their place of where they were. I mean, I had those thoughts with my kids. My daughter screaming when she was 2 years old from colic was driving me up a wall. Thank God my wife was the great mother she was, because I don't know how she did it. So we all have those moments. And so it's moving through it, owning it, and saying it's okay because you know what? We're not alone. And that's the other thing too. Lindsay was seeking consistently, as shown through the testimony, help, 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 I need help. Lindsay was open with her communication. She's transparent. And the prosecution keeps saying she wasn't open. No, she might not have felt completely safe with the same people, but she was as open as possible. She's calling her mother-in-law and telling her how she had ideation. She's telling her mom. She's telling her husband. She's telling some of the therapists. She is broadcasting out to the world. She's telling everyone her fears of being addicted to drugs. She's telling, she got fears of being addicted to alcohol, so she gave up that. So I heard some of those comments yesterday. Well, she's addicted to drugs and alcohol. Where did you get that? Watch the testimony. Listen to the experts. Do your own research. Don't research on TikTok. And just open your mind up and just critically think through it. Play it all out. See what makes sense.
That's interesting. I like your analogy. I've never heard the word alcohol use disorder, honestly. I've heard alcoholism, but that's a new way, I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just behind the times.
No, it's pretty recent, last couple of years. Okay. They've moved on from alcohol, the label that's of alcoholism to alcohol use disorder.
Okay, I like that. It's a very good analogy. And you can, you know, insert, you know, any sort of anything. Disorder here. When you see that, or when you see people lashing out, and I'm going to go even beyond like alcohol use disorder, when you see people lashing out in very extreme ways, at other people that have nothing to do with their own orbit, but in very unbalanced ways too, in imbalanced than their typical reaction is of other issues or things that you would think would be important to them. When they're going to an extreme in that lashing out, a lot of times it has something to do with themselves. A lot of times it has a lot to do with something that they believe that, and I'm not saying it is, I mean, obviously murder is, but a lot of times people will be lashing out in very extreme ways at things that they believe are bad, whether it's bad or not. But you see it quite a bit. You see it in politics a lot. You see it in sometimes in religion a lot, or somebody thinking this type of lifestyle is bad or that, and then they go to such an extreme to cover up their own guilt of what they believe is bad, that it comes across as very unbalanced to the rest of the world. And I wonder if that's the alcohol analogy was very close. I also see it kind of like that too, where I'm going to go so extreme over here, but it's really nothing to do with the case. It's more so what's going on in here that I have so much shame about.
It's always about what's going inside. I tell people this frequently, because when people have moments at work or in their own personal life where, you know, they say, oh, someone treated me really bad, can you believe they said that to me? I said, no, they didn't say it to you. They're being who they are. You just happen to be in their way that day. You know, you triggered some response in them, some fear, some insecurity, some trauma response, and they're just projecting it onto you. It really had nothing to do with you. They're just being who they are. So you don't. And so here's what we can do as human beings. This is why these cases like this and all these things kind of flow around us. I mean, they can permeate us, and that's why we have each other. But they don't really personally affect me, because people aren't reacting to me or to you. They're projecting their own crap. And so that's why this case has been so amazing to watch and be part of, because you're seeing a lot of people in pain.
Yeah.
And that's what this is all about. There's a lot of people in the world in pain right now, because if there's just think about all the visceral, hugely emotional responses to this, you know, especially on the conspiracy theory side, where people are battling against each other, being nasty to each other. That's not the only place in their life. You really think, so again, just how I do my analysis on thing, is this person going from the completely calm, healthy person to a million? All of a sudden they're reacting like this? I guarantee you not. And so ask yourself this, if you're one of these people that is viscerally having this amazingly high emotional response to this case, and you're lashing out, you're seeing yourself on X and Facebook and posting these horrendous things, ask yourself this question: who else am I doing this to on anything else in my life? Because I guarantee you are. Yeah. And ask yourself, what's the effect on the relationships in my life because of this behavior I'm having in all aspects of my life? Because it's not just this case you're doing it on. I guarantee you that. Yeah. And then ask yourself, are you the type of person that people want in their life because of how you're treating them?
Yeah. It's inventory that is healthy to take, and we need to take on a regular basis to maintain ourselves as being healthy individuals, because we all can go down those roads.
Yes.
And it's very easy to do so. Tomorrow, we're going to have another very fascinating conversation with Siobhan Scott about all this, about essentially the culture war that has erupted out of the Lindsey Clancy case. We're going to dive deep into all of these concepts. So be here if you want to participate in that conversation, 11 a.m. Central on Wednesday, tomorrow. Here on the show, it will be August 19th of 26, in case you're watching this 30 years from now. But you can go back and watch it then, the 30-year-old conversation. But it's going to be fascinating, and I certainly welcome you guys to think of your questions you want to bring to Siobhan tomorrow, because we're going to dive deep into that. Fascinating conversation today, everybody. Thank you for being here. Thank you for weighing in. Great dialogue about this case. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. We can continue this off the air, and the repeats, we will definitely do that. Hey, today, while you're doing stuff, check out Robin's latest book, It's Not All About Me. Get it on Amazon or wherever you get books. Audible, you can also get the audiobook version of it as well, and hear the smooth sounds of Robin Drake reading you.
Isn't that kind of a theme every show? Why, it's not
yes,
all about me.
Yes, the smooth sounds. I'll beat mix you to like some Sade or something.
I'll tell you, next time I got to do
the remix.
It. If I do another book, I'll either have you or Todd read it, just because you guys have much better radio voices than I do.
No, I listen to
you're great.
A lot. You're playing in my background all the time when I'm listening.
All right, you got some
stuff.
Issues.
And then on Thursday, we're going to examine Tony's disorder of listening to Robin all the time when we're not on the air together.
As you all know, we have a big bromance going on the show. We really do. We do love each other hard.
Your thoughts in the comments. We'll continue it there. Until next time, for Robin and Todd, I'm Tony. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
In today's world, planning ahead isn't always top of mind, but not having life insurance can leave families facing difficult financial uncertainty during already emotional times. In many cases, loved ones are left managing expenses, debts, or long-term obligations without a clear plan in place. Life insurance is one way to help provide financial security and support when it's needed most. That's where Ethos comes in. Ethos makes getting life insurance fast and easy, and it's 100% online. You can get a quote within seconds, apply in minutes, and even get same-day coverage. There's no medical exam. You just answer a few simple health questions online, and coverage options are flexible with up to $3 million available and some policies starting at around $30 a month. Ethos has also earned strong customer feedback with a 4.9 out of 5 star rating on Trustpilot based on more than 5,500 reviews as of August 2026. Help protect your family with life insurance through Ethos. Get your instant quote today at ethos.com. That's ethos.com. Application times and rates may vary.
Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big. Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino.